नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So we're reading the chapter entitled Bali Maharaj Surrenders the Universe. And the text for today is Canto 8, Chapter 20, text number 7. Shreya Kurvanti Bhutanam Sadavo Dustya Chupihi Dadyam Shibi Prabritataya Kovikalpo Daradishu Shreya Kurvanti Bhutanam Sadavo Dustya Chasubihi Dadyam Shibi Prabhitayaha Kovikalpo Daradishu Shreya Kurvanti Bhutanam Sadavo Dustya Chasubihi Tadyam Shibi Pratitayaha Kovikalpo Daradishu. He's chant. Shreya Kurvanti Bhutanam Sadavo Dustya Subihi Tadyam Shibi Prabritaya Kovikalpo Daradishu Shreya Kurvanti Bhutana Sadavo Dustya Chasubihi Sadyam Shibi Prabritaya Kovikalpo Daradishu Shreya Kurvanti Bhutanam Sadavo Dustya Chasubihi Tadyam Shibi Prabritaya Kovikalpo Daradishu Shreya Kurvanti Bhutanam Sadavo Dustya Chasubihi Tadyam Shibi Prabritaya Kovikalpo Daradishu Shreya Kurvanti Bhutanam Sadavo Dustya Chasubihi Tadyam Shibi Prabritaya Kovikalpo Daradishu. And the word-for-word translation, Shreya. Activities of the utmost importance. Kurvanti. Execute. Bhutanam. Of the general mass of people. Sadavaha. The saintly persons. duścaja, which are extremely hard to give up. Asubhi, by their lives. Dadyan, Maharaj Dadichi. Shibi, Maharaj Shibi. Prabhitaya, and similar great personalities. Ka, what? Vikalpa, consideration. Dara Adishu, in giving the land to the Brahmanas. So the translation. Dadichi, Shibi, and many other great personalities were willing to sacrifice even their lives for the benefit of the people in general. This is the evidence of history. So why not give up this insignificant land? What is the serious consideration against it? In purport by Srila Prabhupada. Bali Maharaj was prepared to give everything to Lord Vishnu. And Sukracharya, being a professional priest, might have been anxiously waiting, doubting whether there had been any such instance in history in which one had given everything in charity. Bali Maharaj, however, cited the tangible examples of Maharaj Shibi and Maharaj Dadichi, who had given up their lives for the benefit of the general public. Certainly, one has attachment for everything material, especially one's land. But land and other possessions are forcibly taken away at the time of death, as stated in Bhagavad Gita. Mrityu sarva haras chaham. The Lord personally appeared to Bali Maharaj to take away everything he had, and thus he was so fortunate that he could see the Lord face to face. Non-devotees, however, cannot see the Lord face to face. To such persons, the Lord appears as death and takes away all their possessions by force. Under the circumstances, why should we not part with our possessions and deliver them to Lord Vishnu for his satisfaction? Sri Chanaka Pandit says in this regard, San nimite param tyago vinase niyate sati. It's from Chanaka Shloka 36. Since our money and possessions do not last, but will somehow or other be taken away, as long as they are in our possession, it is better to use them for charity to a noble cause. Therefore, Bali Maharaj defied the order of his so-called spiritual master. Om Agyana Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaham Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Srimate Roma Padaswami Iti Namine Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Pashyacha Desha Tarine Pancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sundubhyayavacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So this is a continuation of Bali Maharaj's response to Sukracharya. And in this particular text of today, he's giving two examples of personalities who were willing to make a great sacrifice for the benefit of people in general. And he gives these examples in order to give further support to the argument that he's presenting to Sukracharya, that he, Bali, is willing to sacrifice the land in his possession. Bali Maharaj had conquered all the planets of the universe. So actually these planets were rightfully in his possession. In fact, if we go back to a description of his preparing for the conquest of the planets, we get some idea of the indomitable strength of Bali Maharaj. So I'm going to read just that particular description. When he assembled with his own soldiers and the demon chiefs who were equal to him in strength, opulence, and beauty, they appeared as though they would swallow the sky and burn all directions with their vision. After this gathering, the demoniac soldiers, Bali Maharaj departed for the opulent capital of Indra. Indeed, he seemed to make the entire surface of the world tremble. So, some description of his indomitable strength. Now, a king can conquer other kings on the basis of his strength. And also, he can actually acquire any kingdoms as a result of that conquest. So those kingdoms are considered to be lawfully his kingdoms by virtue of his conquest. And in the case of Bali Maharaj, his conquest of the heavenly planets was such that the demigods had disappeared. They'd fled, actually. And he then entered the heavenly kingdom. And it was from that position, being situated in the heavenly kingdom, that he actually utilized his strength to bring all three worlds under his control. And that was earlier on in the Bhagavatam in the 15th chapter. So there wasn't even a direct battle that Bali Maharaj had to fight. And this is because his strength stemmed from the spiritual power that he'd received benedictions given him by the Brahmanas, the descendants of Bhrigu Muni. So in fact, Bali Maharaj's prowess was not his own, but it was that of his exalted Guru Sukracharya at that time. It was those blessings that brought him the conquest of the heavenly planets. Now, Bali Maharaj happened to be very charitably disposed towards the Brahmanas. This was a salient characteristic in his personality. And in fact, he'd been pleasing the Brahmanas all along, hence even the mention of these benedictions that had come to him that had permitted this conquest of the heavenly planets. And he'd been pleasing the descendants of Bhrigu Muni, the Brahmanas. So that is why they decided, Bali Maharaj is situated on the throne of Indra, but they asked him still to perform 100 Ashwamedha sacrifices. There was a reason for them asking Bali Maharaj to do this, and that is that they had some uncertainty whether he'd be able to stay in his position, because he's there by strength of their power and their blessings. So they asked him to perform at least as many sacrifices as Lord Indra had performed in order to hold his position. And Bali Maharaj performed these sacrifices. And he's just charitably disposed to the Brahmanas. That's his particular characteristic. So he gained a reputation throughout the three worlds. In fact, it's said that in his particular position, he was like the brilliant moon in the sky. So extremely effulgent personality. Now, in the same way that Bali Maharaj had abided by this principle of the Kshatriya accepting from the Brahmanas, it had allowed him to become opulent and prosperous. And I found myself thinking of something that's not completely related, but somehow it came to mind. Srila Prabhupada, and I'm taking a jump, Srila Prabhupada gave a particular advice to the young persons who were having to manage the early Krishna consciousness movement, particularly 26 Second Avenue in New York. So they're in that position where they're having to manage something. And he particularly said to them the following words. He said, "Presence of the transcendental sound received from the spiritual master should be the guidance of life. That will make our spiritual life successful." And he also added, "If you feel very strongly about my absence, you may place my pictures on my sitting places, and this will be a source of inspiration for you." So these are instructions that are to give strength to the disciples, and disciples that were a little shaky because they'd only had a few months of training. So just again, that it's this point that the instructions of the spiritual master are what's maintaining the strength of the disciples to perform particular duties, like managing, in the case of Bali Maharaj, the entire universe, or in the case of the devotees in New York, managing the beginning structure and the activities related to the Krishna consciousness movement. Now, Bali Maharaj, he gives historical evidence, or he cites historical evidence. Another example, or he gives an example of a sacrifice that was performed that benefited the general people. So he uses the example of King Shibi, who protected a pigeon who had taken shelter of him from a hawk. By sacrificing his own flesh in place of the pigeon to the hawk. We can draw a parallel with Bali Maharaj sacrificing the land in his possession. So there's a question that presents itself immediately from this particular point that we've come to. What actually constitutes religious principles? You know, the order of the spiritual master, or the giving in charity as it's required. So Sukracharya advises, this is Sukracharya's advice, "Learned scholars do not praise that charity which endangers one's livelihood. Charity, sacrifice, and austerity and fruitive activities are possible for one who is competent to earn his livelihood properly. They're not possible for one who cannot maintain himself." This was a little bit earlier on in the 19th chapter. So the implication is that charity that will be in the form of the three worlds, because this is the land that's in Bali Maharaja's possession, it's going to endanger his livelihood. Now, if the livelihood of the king is the acquisition of land, as Bali Maharaj had performed such an acquisition, then that offering of that same land in charity would endanger his livelihood only if there's no further land to conquer, because it's the livelihood of the king to conquer land. If there's no further land to conquer, and that same land that was conquered is now given away in charity, then there would be difficulty. So these instructions that Sukracharya is giving appear logical. If all the conquerable land is under Bali Maharaj's control, which it is, he's managing all three planetary systems, all three worlds, so all the planetary systems within the universe. But what is Bali Maharaj's view? On his side, he calls the land insignificant. I mean, he uses that word, insignificant. And Srila Prabhupada reveals just prior to this reading today that he'd already decided to give the land to Lord Vamanadev. So in performing charity, Bali Maharaj had a particular mood. It was the mood of somebody who didn't expect any results by the performance of this act of charity. That's his mood. And this is also the mood of King Shibi. Both Bali Maharaj and King Shibi are acting out of duty. For King Shibi, it's the duty of protecting a citizen. The citizen is a pigeon in his kingdom, who was seeking his shelter. And in his case, he also didn't want to disturb the natural laws. So he provided the hawk with the requisite flesh in place of the pigeon. And for Bali Maharaj, his duty is that of satisfying the Brahmana dwarf. And he reveals that he understands his duty because he says, if the Brahmana Vamanadev is not satisfied by whatever gifts one is given, why not please him with the riches one is destined to lose at death? So both kings act in accord with a particular instruction that we find in Bhagavad Gita in the 18th chapter in the 6th verse, where Krishna says, all these activities should be performed without any attachment or expectation of result. They should be performed as a matter of duty. O son of Prita, that is my final opinion. Saitani api tu karmani, sangam chyaktva falani cha, karvayanti me parta nishchitam matam utaman. So they're acting in accord with that instruction of Lord Krishna's for how charity should be given. And those activities, the sacrifices that are performed are purifying, but when they're performed, there shouldn't be any expectation of a result by their performance. Or in other words, a sacrifice which is performed for material advancement should be given up. That's the implication of Lord Krishna's statement. And implicit in Sukracharya's advice is a material consideration. It's very clear. So the concern is with livelihood being endangered. Srila Prabhupada's generalization with regard to Lord Krishna's statement of how acts of charity and sacrifice should be performed is that a sacrifice that purifies one's existence and elevates one to the spiritual plane shouldn't be stopped. And in fact, Srila Prabhupada gives the criterion in response to that earlier question that came of what's actually a religious action. He gives the criterion for a religious action. Any activity that leads to the devotional service of the Lord should be accepted. Any activity. So any sacrifice or charity which helps one in the discharge of devotional service to the Lord should be accepted. So this was the principle that Bali Maharaj was putting into practice. While Sukracharya, knowing Vamanadev to be the Supreme Lord himself, to be Lord Vishnu, he was objecting to the giving of charity. He wanted to stop that giving of that charity. So I was reflecting on this quite a bit because there was a time very early in my devotional life where I was confronted with a particular decision that had to be made. There was a situation where the question was, should I surrender some flesh on my body or should I not? And this is the result of an accident that had happened. So because of being in a particular hospital situation, the persons there were saying this should be, you know, surrendered, given up, this flesh that had got torn. And I myself always practice a very natural, simple way of life. So my thought was immediately to call the herbalist that I always see. And the herbalist said, no, this flesh can be saved. You know, it can be saved. It'll just need a long time of a lot of medicines or herbal teas, and, you know, it can be rescued. But I was in a situation where everything was dictating that I had to give up that piece of skin. And so naturally, I asked my spiritual master, what's to be done in this situation? Like, I know it can be saved, but I'm in a situation where everything is dictating that I have to give it up. And he didn't directly respond to me because naturally it's a little bit difficult. So it came through, he asked one of Srila Prabhupada's other disciples to relay the advice to me. So the advice was in the form that the correct course of action was to give up that piece of flesh because there were implications with having come into that situation, and that is that there was going to be you know, material compensation coming from acting within that system. So naturally, I didn't hesitate at all. You know, if my spiritual master thinks that way, perfect. So I dutifully accepted it. And much later, my spiritual master asked, not me directly, I think it was to Subal, you know, did I understand that he was acting as a by medium of Lord Krishna to give such an instruction? And for me, there was no difficulty whatsoever. I fully accepted that, you know, there was great understanding of the situation, and I was quite willing to follow, even if, you know, it obviously was not a comfortable or an easy thing, but I accepted it. And much later I saw the benefits, because indeed it's allowed for a very peaceful Krishna conscious life from the point of view of all the material needs being attended to by virtue of that sacrifice. So now Sukracharya is in the position of the spiritual master, and he's king of the three worlds, or he's spiritual master to the king of the three worlds. And there's an implicit danger to his position. And this is a danger that Lord Chaitanya reveals, where a spiritual master can run into trouble. And he's dealing with a devotee called Kamalamanta Vishvasa. And this devotee had gone to the king of Puri and asked him to liquidate a debt that Advaita Acharya had, and the debt was 300 rupees. And he also asked the king of Puri to establish Advaita Acharya as an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this appears externally quite in order, you know, performing such an act. But there was a contradiction that Lord Chaitanya saw in that particular action. And the contradiction that Lord Chaitanya saw was that an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead couldn't be indebted to anyone in this material world. So He saw that it would appear as though the king of Puri was permitting him to be an incarnation, and he'd taken away a debt problem. So hence the king of Puri was somebody that Advaita Acharya would have to be indebted to. So, and this is what Lord Chaitanya says. So this is on this topic of the spiritual master sometimes being in a dangerous position. Advaita Acharya, my spiritual master, should never accept charity from rich men or kings, because if a spiritual master accepts money or grains from such materialists, his mind becomes polluted. This is from the Adi Leela 1251. So the acceptance of charity, money or foodstuffs from a materialistic person pollutes the mind of the charity's recipient. And Bali Maharaj, clearly he's not falling into the category of being a materialistic king. In fact, we know he's extremely pious, just by virtue of the fact that within his personality is that characteristic of always giving charity to the brahmanas. So he's definitely a pious king. But he doesn't see himself that way, and he describes himself this way. Persons like us, who are still attached to material enjoyment, who are contaminated by the modes of material nature, and who lack the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, cannot follow the supreme path of Prahlad Maharaj, the exalted devotee of the Lord. This is his description of himself from the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the 24th chapter. So, of course, this is Bali Maharaj showing great humility, because clearly he's following in the path of Prahlad Maharaj, because he'd already mentally decided he was immediately willing to give that land. There was no hesitation on his part, because that was the request from a brahmana, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He was immediately willing. So he had in fact surrendered himself to Vamanadev, Bali Maharaj. So he was actually following religious principles. And that particular religious principle that he followed is that one should be prepared to give up everything for Krishna's satisfaction. And the other principle is one should also be ready to accept everything for Krishna's satisfaction. So there's two sides of that. And he showed that he was prepared to give up everything for Krishna's satisfaction. His entire control of the land of the lower, middle, and upper planetary systems. And that particular religious principle is coming from Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami from the Madhya Leela. And included in that is another religious principle, and that is also from Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, that he lists 64 items, and I picked out these two in particular because they highlight Bali Maharaj's particular religious principles that he's following. It's giving up wealth for Krishna's service and performing desirable activities such as giving charity sacrifices. So he's exemplifying the following of those principles, Bali Maharaj. Of course, there's also the chanting of vows and austerities with the purpose of achieving Krishna. We don't hear about those practices of Bali Maharaj, but he understands that the purpose is to achieve Krishna. So these constitute actual religious principles. And this is how Krishna puts it, by human beings who have actually surrendered themselves to me. And they automatically are developing love for me by following those principles. And he mentions this, Krishna does, in the 11th canto when he's speaking to Uddhava. It marks somebody who's actually following religious principles, adhering to at least these two that I've highlighted are principles that constitute religious principles. So for a devotee such as Bali Maharaj, the goal he has is only one goal. That's why it doesn't matter that nothing else remains for him. His goal will have been achieved, which is that of attaining Krishna, or in his case, Lord Vishnu. And why Sukracharya is not fully following religious principles is that he's dependent on the charity, admittedly of a very pious king, but his dependence on charity is seeing the king as somebody who's enjoying a very prosperous kingdom. So there lies the problem with his trying to prevent the giving of charity, and hence preventing the following of an actual religious principle. So those are some thoughts on this verse today. If there's any thought to expand our discussion.
Hi, Krishna. I was just reading that in the purport, in the third canto, Prabhupada is saying that a mixed devotee still has desire for like transcendental happiness or going to the spiritual world, whereas a pure devotee doesn't even have that desire. He'd serve Krishna anywhere in separation. I'm wondering, for practicing devotees, do we strive for that pure devotion, or do we strive for going to the spiritual world?
So the question that Giridhari Prabhu has presented is, as a practicing devotee, is one actually striving to go to the spiritual world, or is one just striving for pure devotion, meaning serving? a devotee who's serving Lord Krishna, his goal is the pleasure of Krishna. So that means giving attention to the immediate sacrifice that has to be performed, or the immediate charity that has to be performed, with the purpose of Krishna's pleasure in mind. So with that focus, it's almost a little bit, it would appear myopic, because there's not the view of, I'll be going to the spiritual world as a result of this. So one keeps within that myopic vision myopic from the point of view that one keeps one's focus on the immediate sacrifices and the immediate charity that has to be performed for the pleasure of Krishna. So in that way, there's the natural elevation of consciousness, there's the natural development of love for Krishna. So it's a natural cultivation of the relationship with Krishna, which is automatically putting one in the spiritual world, because that is Krishna's residence, actual residence. So there's no need to extraneously be endeavoring for the result of reaching the spiritual world. The relationship automatically puts one there. Yeah. And the main goal being to give pleasure to Lord Krishna through one's acts of sacrifice or charity.
One more question, if that's okay. At one point you made that said we're not supposed to accept charity from materialistic people, mm-hmm. But we often, when distributing books, are accepting charity from materialistic people. Are we supposed to do that?
That's a very interesting question that Giridhari Prabhu has brought up. So in book distribution, one is accepting charity from materialistic persons. Should one do this? Because there was mentioned during the course of the class that, at least it was Lord Chaitanya's direct instruction, that brahmanas and sannyasis shouldn't be accepting charity from materialistic persons. So the idea there is that the brahmana or the sannyasi who's accepting charity from a materialistic person, their consciousness gets a bit polluted, which means that they run the risk of forgetting Krishna. So in book distribution, there's, you could say, charity being given, or a person is sacrificing some of their monetary earnings in exchange for transcendental knowledge. So those persons are certainly acting somewhat materialistically, that they're giving something for something. Of course, what they're receiving is transcendental knowledge, so therefore it takes it out of the realm of receipt of something material. The result they're getting, because a materialistic person is always thinking of result, so the result the materialistic person wants is a tangible object in exchange for giving some monetary something for what they're receiving. So because they're receiving transcendental knowledge, that particular result-orientated mentality is already been chipped at. So even if their intention is generally result-oriented, in that particular circumstance, they're giving true charity. And they're willingly taking transcendental knowledge in the form of a book. So that moment is actually a moment that, in all their materialistic outlook, is a moment that's free of that materialism. So actually, one has facilitated that. So one can happily take that monetary fund that's coming because of what's actually taken place in that particular moment. It's freeing the person from their whole materialistic outlook in that particular moment because of their acquiescence to that exchange. So I'd say one can happily take it, knowing what an extraordinary transcendental act has actually been performed by that person. So.
If I may just expand on that principle that you mentioned, that the danger of taking money from materialistic people is the contamination of one's own consciousness. So even though one may be doing book distribution, that contamination is very possible, which is why, and we can see that someone may be distributing books for material reasons, and that's why I heard I attended a seminar on spiritual culture in Mayapur, and one of the principles was that the danger of receiving personal monetary support from one's devotional service is that it can contaminate the way one conducts that service. So it may be compromised that you're performing that service and you alter the way that you perform that service in order to acquire more funds. So that may be the means by which you're distributing books, or that may be the message you're saying when you're preaching. Maybe a more popular message brings in more dakshin. Yeah, things like this.
So there was the point added that there's also the need to consider the person who's distributing the books and the danger that lies for that person, not even from the angle of their taking money from a materialistic person, but rather that they themselves may be adopting a materialistic mood in their distribution of the books, if the gain that's coming from the distribution of their books is being used to support that person by those funds. So Certainly, the purity of the transaction is dependent on the consciousness of the person that's doing the distribution, that the person is cognizant, like extremely cognizant, of the gravity and the enormity of the act that's been performed in that particular moment with a member of the general public. If that moment of gravity and the enormity of that moment is tinged with the person having some material motive, that certainly is going contrary to the principle that Lord Krishna is outlining, which is that any act of sacrifice or charity has to be done without that expectation of result. So it certainly is going against the ultimate religious principle, like literally against. Even if it is the distribution of transcendental literature, the consciousness is extremely important, that there is not that idea of the result, a monetary result coming from it. So the act of sacrifice is the correct one, but then the consciousness, if it's material and result-oriented, is definitely not going to allow for either the purification of heart, and it's not going to allow for the person being able to be on a spiritual plane. So, materially motivated means forgetting Krishna. It's like the person becomes responsible for their own well-being, their own material comfortable situation. So yes, that certainly is a huge danger, and it's completely contrary to the instruction given by Krishna for how an act of sacrifice or charity should be performed. So a person would have to monitor themselves very carefully, and if that is becoming a danger, the person would certainly need to consult with the person that they take guidance from, or some devotees that can help the person to write that. So. Okay. Shiva Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Thank you very much for your very kind attention. Shiva Prabhupada Ki Jai.